Today's daf in Masechet Erevin brought to you so excitedly from Yerushalayim Ir HaKedesh, soon to be completed, and let's hope the rest of the world will come along and be completed instead of getting smashed. But in any event, we were holding on daf Samach Zayin. I think it would be kedai for us, just because of the fact that we had some really serious issues, it might be kedai just to remember where we were holding. Shmuel had come up with three fundamental rules, besides three other issues, only one of which was nogea, those three rules. And his first rule was that wherever you have people that are assering on each other, but they have an option to make an Erev, and something happened, and they needed to come onto Bittul because someone forgot or whatever, then they can be mevatlim. So now the question was, what is that talking about? Reb Sheshes, remember, he said that's talking about even two chatzerot, one to the other chatzer. Despite the fact that Shmuel elsewhere said another rule, that one chatzer cannot be mevatel to another chatzer, that is only talking about where they could not be osrim. But in a case where you've got an inner and outer chatzer, where since over there you have an easement to go through the outer chatzer, you're going to be osering on them. If you were a regular osr b'mekomo and you hadn't made your own erev, or even if you were a regular mutter b'mekomo and you had made your own erev, according to Rabbi Akiva, so then you would still have an option, even though it was chatzar l'chatzar, since it fits Shmuel's first rule. Koma komsha osrin u'ma'arvim, you can then go ahead, and they can be ma'arvim, because they had a door between them, obviously. So then you could be mevatim. Remember that Rava yesterday did not like that at all. And he said, no, Shmuel means exactly what he says. You can never be mevatel from one chatzar to another chatzar. The only case where that would work was, interestingly enough, in a case where they had made an Erev, they put the Erev in the inside chatzar, but one guy from the outside chatzar had forgotten to join, and because of that, the inside chatzar could say to the outside chatzar, we have no interest in your presence here, we're slamming the door on you, okay? And forget about it. Now, that, by the way, is a machlokas that we're going to be getting to later on about whether they can do that unilaterally, or do they need the outer chutzner to, why don't you bring in your daughter, for heaven's sakes? I mean, why does she have to stay? You know, we're very open-minded here, you know. Why does she have to stay out of range? There you go. Okay, so the question is, do you need to have a bittel from the outer chutzner to the inner chutzner? That's, we'll see later, this is Machlokas Rabbi Akiva and the Rabbanan. Fine, so, I mean, if you hold you don't need bittel, it's not really a great example of Shmuel's ruling, because Shmuel is saying where you can do bittel. If you hold like Rabbi Akiva that you need bittel, everything fits perfectly. Okay, so over there it will help for the outside to say, okay, fine, we give up, we're not going to walk into your chutzner, even though you agreed to have an erev with us, and then they can be slamming the door, figuratively speaking, obviously. Okay, so that was the first rule. The second rule, which says that in a case where you could be ma'arev if you wanted to, but you don't aser if you don't, now that's a simple case. You got two chatzerot, independent, both have their own exit to Rosh HaSarabim, and over there they have a door between them. If they wanted to, they could be ma'arev, but they don't aser on each other, they're not ma'arev. So Shmuel said, that's no good. And remember, Rabbi Yochanan said, that is good. You can, because remember, Shmuel held that the din is that the Rabbanan only gave the din of bittul as an emergency measure in case something went wrong. But if anyway you've got your own chutzner, you don't need an emergency measure. We had the same issue about playing in the churva with your kids' toys. Are you allowed to be mavata to the other people? That's not an emergency, according to Shmuel. That was the other rule that Shmuel had said. Can't be mavata from a chutzner to the other, ever. At least that's the way Rav understands it. And you can't be mavato to use a joint churva, because you have a chutzner. What do you need the churva for? So your kids will play tomorrow. Fine. But so in that case, Rabbi Yochanan disagreed. But Shmuel takes it on, but that's the halacha. Since you got along until now, you can get along without bittul. The third case that we had was where you are asering, but you don't have an option of being an Erev. Now, that's talking about where you had a goy who was there. And Rabbi Yochanan, according to this, that would mean that you cannot be mevato in the case of the motel, which had actually come up. Remember, they were in the motel, and the goy shows up, and there was Shiloh was, would they be able to rent from him on Shabbos? Yes, you can rent from him on Shabbos, but then you would need to go ahead and be mevatel all of your own units in the motel to the one guy who had rented from him, and that you couldn't do because you didn't have the option of having the Erev before Shabbos. That's the way that Shmuel understood it, which was driving Rabbi Elazar the Amora crazy. I mean, like, how come Rabbi Yochanan says that's okay, or Shmuel said it's not okay? It turned out that it's a machlokas, and that indeed the halacha is that, according to Rabbi Yochanan, there was no problem. You did the right thing. You can go ahead and be mevatel, even though you can do that bittul only after renting from the goy, and therefore you need to come on and doing two things, one of which you wouldn't have been able to do before Shabbos. It doesn't matter. You could do it now. Okay, those were the issues that we had gotten up to, and we're on Daf Samach Zayin, Amud Aleph, Armalei Rav Huna Bereder Rav Yehoshua LaRava. There's just one issue that he wants to clarify. He does not like the Rava's pshat. And why doesn't he like Rava's pshat? Because he says, look, I mean, in the situation where, let's take, I mean, the truth is, the question he asks applies to some of other Rava's other cases as well, the second case. He's asking about the third case, but it's the same question. Basically, Rav Huna Bereder Rav Yehoshua has got a problem with the fact that if one of the inside members forgot, and it will not help him to be mevatel reshus to the other people inside because of the fact that he still would need to be mevatel to people outside. And he can't, because according to Rava, one of Shmuel's rules, which is mentioned separately, you can never be mevatel from one chatzar to another, even if they are not side by side. That's the way he understood it, even though you have to go through the other chatzar. So Rav Huna Bereder Rav Yehoshua did not understand why Rava would say something like that. Let's say even it's true. I don't see, says he, why you would need Bittul Rishus separately to the outside Chatzar. Are we agreed that the outside Chatzar has made an Erev with the inside Chatzar? Yes, that's the case. They deposited their Erev in the inside Chatzar, which means that theoretically they are all one big happy family, right? So then if I'm mevatel to one member of the big happy family, aren't I automatically mevatel through the agency of the existing Erev to everybody that's part of the Erev, right? So why would he, you said he can't be mevatel to the outside. I agree. Let's say I agree, okay? Maybe Shmuel really meant that. And you can't be mevatel to the outside, right? You don't need to be mevatel to the outside. It's automatic because of the Erev. That's the problem, says Rabbi Yehoshua. Let the bar pnimit be mevatel only to the pnimit. And then the outside one will be automatically tishterei bahadayu because they have an Erev bahadayu. And so then they should be, no yawning. It's not mutter to yawn. This is too exciting to yawn. So keman, says Rava to him, what? I'm yawning? No, sorry. Says Rava to him, actually, you're right. Theoretically, there is such a shita, but I don't go to that shita. You're going according to Rabbi Eliezer. Remember we had before this question, we raised this question back at the beginning of the Masechet. Do you need to go to every single person in the chatzar and be mevatel reshus? So you'd be 100% right. According to Rabbi Eliezer, the moment that you're mevatel to somebody who's part of the big happy family, you don't need to be mevatel to the others. Okay, so then it's true. The very fact that the outside had an Erev together with the inside, if the inside guy who forgot was mevatel, that would be sufficient for both of you. But I wasn't going according to Rabbi Eliezer. I mean, Rabbi Eliezer. I was going according to the Rabbanan. The Rabbanan told you have to be mevatel to every single individual, in which case there is no way for you to be mevatel, according to Shmuel, to the outside ones. The way I understand Shmuel, you can never be mevatel from one chatzar to another. Okay, so we're getting a little bit into the minutiae over here of the halachas, but it becomes clearer and clearer as we understand all of the factors, all of the elements that need to be taken into consideration. It's a remarkable number of complex issues that we're taking into consideration in order to come up with a simple psak over here. And that's, of course, why they needed to wait to hear from Rabbi Yochanan, that you would do the right thing or not. I mean, it's easy to forget something completely. Okay, now, the question is like this. Rav Chisda, before we get to the conversation, we need to know the type of relationship that Rav Chisda and Rav Sheshes had with each other. They were terrified of each other. but they were terrified for opposite reasons. So, I mean, when Rav Chisda and Rav Sheshes would meet with each other, it was sort of like Avram Avinu meeting up with the children of Noah, you know, which was, oh my God. So this was the Malkitzedek thing, right, that we talk about in Tanakh. So when Reb Chista and Reb Sheshes would meet, Reb Chista's, if you were looking carefully, you could see that Reb Chista's lips were shaking when he was talking, because he was so unsure of himself. He was literally trembling. And the reason he was trembling is because Reb Sheshes was such a bucky in all of the Mishnayas and Brises. He thought he's gonna kill me. I know I'm gonna forget something. He's gonna ask me a kasha from this Brise and that Mishnah and the steer and the Mishnayas. He's gonna make a fool out of me. I was afraid to say anything. Reb Sheshes, you could see his entire body trembling because he was terrified of Reb Chista. And the reason he was terrified of Reb Chista is because Reb Chista was so brilliant that it was from the people of Reb Chista that he was going to tear him to shreds on anything that he said. So he was just simply terrified of him. Anyway, so they met up once, and Reb Chista shook up Reb Sheshes by asking him, okay, what would you say, an interesting case like this, all right, you got a real Rosh Hashanah, and there's a house on one side of Rosh Hashanah, a house on the other side of Rosh Hashanah. The police arrive, and they put up a police barrier straight across the street on the two sides. So now both of those houses have a newly created chotzer. Because remember, we learned before, any mechitza that's made, even if it's made in the middle of Shabbos, even if it were made by a Jew and it was done b'mezid, it would still be a mechitza, because a mechitza is a mechitza is a mechitza. And therefore, what you now have all of a sudden is two homes with a chotzer between the two homes. Now, of course, the chotzer didn't exist before, but it exists now because of the police barrier. So the question is, if Bo Nochrim V'Kufum Mechitza B'Shabbat, can I utilize Bittul Rishus in order to be able to carry out into the chotzer? I mean, look, once the police are doing us a favor and closing up Fifth Avenue, you know, we might as well put our table and chairs and cholent out there. But in order to do that, I need the Bittul Rishus for the guy across the street whose house opens up into the middle of the street here. So is that okay to do or not? And let me explain to you, okay, don't think I'm just like Trump. I'm very specific about this question. And obviously, if you're going according to Shmuel, and Shmuel says you can't be mevatel rishus from one chotzer to another chotzer, right? And the reason is because since they don't aser each other, and that itself is enough, even though they had an option of having an Erev, but since they don't aser each other, so because of that, they can't use Bittul. Yeah, Bittul is an emergency kind of thing. So then, I mean, obviously I'm not asking this question. I mean, it's ridiculous. Over here, the chotzer didn't even exist. So forget about the idea of whether they could have had an Erev. There wasn't even a chotzer, okay? So because if even in a case where there was a chotzer and they even had the option of making an Erev in the chotzer by opening up the door between the two chotzeres and joining together, nonetheless, Shmuel said, well, listen, you know, what's the point? If they didn't aser, you were good enough without it. And over there, Motzi Leruve. And nonetheless, Shmuel said, look, you cannot make a bit or rishus from one chotzer to another. I mean, this is like the ultimate expression of that case, right? Because over here, forget about, they couldn't make an Erev. They didn't have a chotzer to make an Erev into. And certainly there was no problem yesterday. I mean, it never occurred to me that I'd be able to put my table out in the middle of Fifth Avenue and all of a sudden have a chotzer. So I'm not asking according to that, right? All I'm asking is, according to Rabbi Yochanan, Rabbi Yochanan said, that doesn't bother me. You can be mevatel from one chotzer to another. It's not an emergency measure. It's an enjoying of Shabbos measure. And so, fine, so Rabbi Yochanan said over there, you can be mevatel rishus b'chotzer l'chotzer, right? Now, that means that Rabbi Yochanan was ignoring the requirement that they have to aser on one another. Does that mean that he was also ignoring the other criteria, another one of the criteria, which was that you had to have had the option of making the Erev? And he's saying, I don't care, you have an option, you don't have an option, you asered on each other, you didn't aser on each other. Or was all Rabbi Yochanan is saying is, look, there are two issues over here. One was, did you have the option of making the Erev? And the other one was, and if you didn't make the Erev, would have you asered on each other? Okay, so maybe Rabbi Yochanan was saying, one of those I can do without. So even if you wouldn't have asered on each other, like the case of the side-by-side chotzer that decides that they want to be mevatel rishus on Shabbos, that's fine. But, I mean, you do have to at least have the option of making an Erev before Shabbos. You know, he wasn't saying Shmuel's completely wrong. I'm not sure. It could be that he held, I don't care. You could have made an Erev. What's the difference? Right now, you've got a chotzer. Right now, it would have been nice to have your cholent in the middle of Fifth Avenue and relax in the new police chutzner. So what's the problem? Go ahead and be mevatel the rishus. How far did Rabbi Yochanan mean to take his heter when he said it's not an emergency kind of issue? It's simply an expansion of your Shabbos rights. So that's where I'm asking. Do we say that over there, at least you have the option, if you wanted to, you could have had the Erev. So Rabbi Yochanan says, that's enough. So now you could be Mavatl if you didn't make the Erev. But over here, obviously, there was no Chatzar before. You couldn't have possibly made an Erev. Maybe he would agree to Shmuel, or maybe not. I don't know. Odum Aloshna. So Rav Shesh has said to him, I hold that you cannot be Mavatl. In other words, you need to have at least one of the two issues, either that you're answering on each other, or that you at least had an option to make the Erev before. Okay. Rav Chista then says, okay, I got another question for you, man. You sure? Yeah. Now, here's my question. A goy dies on Shabbos, okay? So now the question is if, now Tosis learns this is talking about that the goy had arrived on Shabbos and died on the same Shabbos. Rashi learns this even if it was there before Shabbos, which creates a problem because before we said that his being there before Shabbos actually allowed us the option to make the Erev before Shabbos, and here Rashi's not learning that way. So the easiest thing to learn is, okay, he came on Shabbos, he died on Shabbos. Now, because of that, we're really messed up because the moment that he came, he was Mevatel any Erev, right? So my question over here is, what would be the din then? Can I be Mevatel Rishus to the other Jews in the motel? And at least one of us will be able to bring out the cholent and the chairs and table, and then we can all sit down and have a nice meal. So that's what I want to know. Mao. Again, let me explain to you. I'm not an idiot. Obviously, according to the Man D'Omer, meaning Rabbi Yochanan, who says that you can do both on Shabbos, you could actually rent from him, and then you could be mevatel one to the other. And that was the case in the motel. There's nothing to ask. I mean, obviously, if Rabbi Yochanan says you could do both of those things, you can also rent and also be mevatel because you need to do both in order to have any use out of it. So Koshkin, over here, you're only doing one of these things because the guy dropped dead. He may have heirs, but they certainly haven't gone through the courts and they're not here yet. Nobody is here. This guy's dead. I don't care if theoretically he's got heirs that are going to move in here. That's not the point. So, of course, all I need to do over here is simply do bittul. There's no akum over here to answer. Why should I be able to do bittul? I wasn't asking according to Rabbi Yochanan. I'm asking you, what about according to Shmuel? Okay, Shmuel says that you cannot do a bittul if you're going to need to do also, in the case of the motel, if you also need to be socher. Okay, so then if that was the pshat, so maybe over there, and the reason is because you couldn't have made that Erev before Shabbos if the goy was there without the bittul that it was going to do. So maybe you can't do both. But maybe in this case where the guy died, maybe Shmuel would agree you could do one and you could at least be mevatel rishus because, I mean, in this case, lemaisa, they are being asring one on the other, even though they could only have done the Erev if they had rented from the goy. So maybe he would agree. Or maybe he holds bichlal. There is no bittul rishus in the case where you don't have those options and the feeling that you were going to be able to do things together before Shabbos. It's all part of Shmuel's overall sense that the din of bittul rishus is an emergency measure for people who are psychologically devastated by having looked forward to an Erev and they end up they don't have the Erev. And because of that, they say, okay, fine, so you can be mevatel rishus. Don't tell me you've been dreaming your whole life of taking your table out in the middle of Fifth Avenue. Or in this case, when you came to the motel, there was nothing to do. You were going to eat in the room, so eat in the room. Okay. That's my question. So there's one of his questions was addressed Aliba de Rabbi Yochanan. One of his questions was addressed Aliba de Shmuel. What would you say about that? So Rav Shesha said, look, I got to tell you, we have discussed this case, actually. Me and Amnuna discussed this case. I say that in that case, they can be Mavatim, even according to Shmuel, because in this case, again, what Rashi is learning, in this case, since the guy was there before Shabbos, theoretically, they could have renting from him. But Amnuna says, ain mevatlin, because since if they had made an Erev and they made it on Erev Shabbos, it wouldn't have been a good Erev because they didn't lemaisa rent. So over here, you can't do bittul if you didn't have the option of doing the Erev. Okay. Now, we're moving on. And we're moving on into a completely new area that we haven't thought of before. And that is, in order for a member of a mavui to answer on other people, We talked before about what happens if somebody's got two exits to the Movli, meaning to two Movlis. He's got one on either side. What is his primary exit? What would we do if the primary exit has a shitov, doesn't have a shitov, but the secondary does have a shitov? All of those cases, where do we consider him to be a member of a Movli? That's a very dangerous position you're in, Moshe Forman, and I'm getting nervous about it. Not because I'm worried that the windowsill is going to be going through your skull, but because I'm worrying about your eyes closing under the influence of the windowsill. Okay. So then the question is, how about if you have an option? You don't have another way to get in and out of the chotzer into the outside of the city, okay? But how about if you've got an option? You've got this beautiful yard that you could spend the whole Shabbos in, and it's a heck of a lot nicer than going outside and going to the public park that's outside filled with people, not practicing social distancing. The heck with it. You'd rather go back into your yard behind the house. Okay. So now the question is, would a guy that did not join up in a shituf, but who has an option to go into a karfaf, so do we say, okay, so look, you know, he didn't join, so let him stay in the karfaf and not be considered to be needing to come out into the Movli. So our first question, I mean, what's fascinating is that over here we have a mirror image of the halacha, if he's Jewish or if he's not Jewish, for interesting reasons. So if the guy is not Jewish, so this is a nochri who's got a separate entrance that goes out of his house, and it opens up into a bik'ah. So it's like outside of the city, there's these fields, and if the guy wants to take a nice walk, all he needs to do is go out there. Obviously, it doesn't take him to the center of town. It doesn't allow him to strike up conversations, but it's nice to be out there. So in that case, I say that even if this guy is a very busy businessman, okay, and he's got 18-wheelers that are traveling into the Movli all day long, unloading things in his front yard, right? He doesn't want to be out there with all of that noise. He'd rather go out to the back and have a nice, relaxing day out in the Bikah. So he does not answer the people in the Movli just because his trucks are coming in and out. If he's not, because we said, if it's not indigenous life, it doesn't answer the Movli. So basically, you're saying, oh, but it's his trucks. He's got his drivers delivering stuff. That's irrelevant. I don't go out there. I'm the guy who lives here. I'm happy to let all the noise. You guys enjoy the noise. I'm going to the backyard. So in that case, he doesn't answer. Yisrael b'nei Movli. Why? Because he actually prefers bepitcha de miyachid le bahu nechale. He prefers to be in his own private area where it's nice and quiet. Now, would that be true even if it wasn't open to the open air and it would just be open up to a backyard and so on? What would be the din over there where it was a karfa? Says Rav Nachman Bar Ami, and he quoted the Ulpana. Now, the Ulpana in this case is not referring to Barry's daughter and his friends and her friends and so on. It's referring to Ulpana means having learned one generation from a previous generation. Ulpana means that somebody says, I have this as a Kabbalah from my Rebbe. He learned it from his Rebbe. I can't trace exactly who said what, but that's called an Ulpana. So Rav Nachman Bar Ami says, listen, I can tell you that I was taught, even if he's got a nice backyard, that's enough. And we consider him to be much more necha. It's more comfortable for him to be in his own backyard than to be part of all of this Movli with everybody else going in and out. Who needs all the noise? Now, the question is, how big does the backyard have to be? So it's very interesting. Until now, the question of a karfaf that was a Beit Satayim had only a technical meaning to us. Remember? What was that technical meaning? That we learned out from the chotzer of the Mishkan that a karfaf Beit Satayim is considered to be a usable area. But if it's more than that and it wasn't made for living in, so then it's not, we don't have any basis for considered to be a living area. So that was mukaf ladira. That was the difference. Such a concept is irrelevant to a goy. I mean, he doesn't have any of the dinim of the different chatseras, and therefore it really shouldn't make any nafkamina to him whatsoever. Nonetheless, fascinatingly, Rab and Rabbi Yosef got together to say that it still makes a difference, because the idea of a Beit Sa'atayim is actually a concept. It's a really meaningful psychological concept, in the sense that up to that area, you are constrained. And the fact that you are the dayar, you relate to as being the single dayar and not really being able to expand. Therefore, I say, if that karfaf was a Beit Sa'atayim or less, then for the goy, it is not big enough to provide him a sense of expansion. This is amazing. Like, until now, this was like entirely a halacha kind of question. How could we apply it to the goy? Now it suddenly turns out that we're saying, no, there's firm psychological elements of spatial relationships, that this is nogea. This has been part of our yesod throughout the entire mesechet. It's not just talking about space. It's talking about the perception of space, the comfort of space, your placement in space. So because of that, if we learned out this din from the Chotzer HaMishkan in terms of how to apply it to Diyur, we need to apply it psychologically to the goy. So then that means the goy, without even realizing it, will not prefer a karfaf that is Beit Sa'atayim or less. He never heard of the deal, but somehow or other, his mind is not going to be at ease in that karfaf, and then he'd rather use the door to the mavoi, which is amazing. And therefore, we can't say it's nechale, and he will asher on all of the nevavoi. Is that not amazing? I think it's astonishing. But when it comes to a Jew, it's the exact opposite. Why? Because the Jew, look, he doesn't have a lot of stuff to deal with on Shabbos. All he's interested in doing is having a nice, quiet place. But he needs to be able to carry into it, right? So of course, if that's the case, if it was Yosef Mibet, sometimes he can't carry. So if he forgot to join the Mavoi, he's not going to feel happy. Oh, it doesn't matter. I got my backyard. Backyard? You can't even bring anything into your backyard. So then he will not be happy if it's bigger, but he will be happy if it's smaller. So it's a mirror image of the issues. To the goy, it's nogea psychologically. To the Jew, it's nogea halachically. And so the results are backward, mirror images results. Therefore, to Yisrael, it's only if it's smaller, to Beit Sa'atayim or less, then he's happy there and he doesn't ask him of it. But if it's more than a Beit Sa'atayim, he says, well, what am I going to do there? I can't bring anything out there. So over there, he's not happy, because there it's a din in Otsah. I love it. Okay. Now, another question we have like this is, in a case, this Rava Bar Chakloi asked Ravuna, in a case where, and this was, he wasn't familiar with our whole discussion, so he asked the same question, how about if the goy's house opens to a karfaf? And Ravuna told him, this discussion, listen here, they said, this was like brilliant, that if it's Beit Sa'atayim, he's asering, because he's not happy there, but if it's more than a Beit Sa'atayim, he's happy there, fine. So now, Amar Ulam Rabbi Yochanan, remember, and this is sort of a sum up of all of the dinim that we've had. And it's amazing that the Gemara specifically over here is going to create this sum up, because this is really something that we needed to work out on our own in Masechet Shabbat. And it's always been a thorn in our side. And I'll explain to you why it's been a thorn in our side. And it's only now that we have a deeper understanding of nature of the Beit Sa'atayim that we can finally address this issue. It's a terrible thorn in our side for a very simple reason. The fact is that anything surrounded by mechitzos is a reshus hayochid d'oraisa, correct? The Rabbanan came up with this thing which has to do with are there diurim, and therefore if it's too big, it reminds you of reshus harabim because nobody's living there, and therefore it's like sort of a park and it's open to everybody. And therefore, what did we do? We said you can't carry outside of Arba Amos. Why? Because we're going to treat that area as a carmelite, right? So that means that the overall concept of Carmelite included a Karfaf Yoter Mibeit Sa'atayim, which is very disturbing. The reason that it's disturbing is because every other Carmelite that we spoke about is really a Mokum Ptur D'oraisa, and we created an Isser because of the Carmelite to carry in it outside of Arba Amos, because we said, look, let's treat it L'chumra like a Reshus HaRabim, correct? But there was never any tzad that something bad could have come from that, because it really was a mokum ptur. The only place where we're really shooting ourselves in the foot, is in this case where we say it's the foot that is actually also over here, and therefore people will conclude, oh, so if I can't carry outside of Arba Amos, so apparently this area is actually not a Rishus HaYachid. And if it's not a Rishus HaYachid, so then there's all types of terrible implications. First of all, if I carry into it from another Carmelis, which is not outside of four, it should be perfectly okay, which would be a violation of a Drabonet. So it's sort of like a contradiction in terms. If I'm creating a Carmelite, which will allow people, therefore, to carry from a Carmelite into a Carmelite, which destroys the Isser that I really wanted to make, which is that it's really Rishus HaYochid, in which case I'm now being makel on my other Gezerah. You can't carry from Rishus HaYochid into a Carmelite. Again, even though Midiraisa was a Malkut Patur, you can carry from anywhere into a Malkut Patur. But we created the Isser. So now, I mean, you're literally shooting yourself in the foot. On the one hand, you're pretending that a real Rishus HaYochid is not really Rishus HaYochid, it's a Carmelite, which is going to be mater people through carrying from Carmelite, not to mention the fact that they will also be makil in their minds in terms of bringing from Rishus HaRabim and throwing into it, which would be an Issa D'Oraisa and Issa Skila, and you're making it more kal, not more chomer in their eyes by pretending it's a Carmelite, which means it's really a Malkut Patur. It is not. It's a 100% absolute Rishus HaYochid Midiraisa. So, I mean, we should have created a new concept for this kind of thing. We shouldn't have said there's Arba Rishus HaShabbos. We should have said that there's Chomesh Rishus HaShabbos in order to avoid this. Because we've got this whole new issue called Karfaf Shloluk of Ladira that we're unfairly comparing to the Dinner Carmelite. And that bothers me. So the truth is, until now, we haven't really had an opportunity to look into the interrelationship of this type of ersatz Carmelite and its relationship to other Carmelites. So here is our opportunity. And it starts off like this. Starts off with a fascinating story. So Ula comes along and he quotes Rabbi Yochanan as saying, look, don't get confused. If you have a mokum that wasn't hukaf ladira, I don't care how big it is, guys. It's irrelevant. As far as the Torah is concerned, it's an absolute Rishus HaYochid. And therefore, it can be bigger than Beit Zatayim. It can be 30 Beit Zatayim, 30 Beit Kors. It can be Beit Zah, 60 Beit Zah, however you want. If you throw from it a Rishus HaRabim into it or vice versa, you're going to be chayev. Why? Again, a mechitza is a mechitza is a mechitza. And there's never anything that we can do about mechitzas except tell you not to rely on them, but they are there, and therefore it's osur for you. So now we have an interesting case. Now, this is a case, Richie, that happens all the time in Richie's Island. You've got these rocks that are sticking out above sea level. And the question is, how big are the rocks? So let's imagine that you've got this tiny island, which is basically a Sela Shebiyam. It's 10 tvachim above sea level, but it's if it's 4 tvachim wide, so then it's basically Rishus HaYochid, right? Because it's 10 tvachim high means that it has mechitzas. 4 by 4 means that it's big enough to be Rishus HaYochid. You cannot carry from that island into the Yam, because then you would be carrying from a Carmelite into a Rishus HaYochid, or from Rishus HaYochid in the opposite direction into the Yam would be Rishus HaYochid into a Carmelite, okay? But how about if it's less than that? If it's less than that, so if it doesn't fit those measurements, then it is also a Carmelite. So then you're carrying from one Carmelite to another. You're allowed to carry from one Carmelite to another as long as you don't go outside of Arba Amos, because we're treating it with the Chumrah of the Rishus HaRabim, right? Now, this last statement is very confusing. Ad kama, how big can it be? How big can it be for what? That's not clear. How big can it be? It can be up to Beit Zatayim. But if it's more than Beit Zatayim, the above, what above, isn't true. What above? That it's not a Carmelite anymore? You cannot carry from it? What exactly is not going to be applied over there? Now, I'm asking you, And I want to show Rabbi Yochanan that he's wrong, okay? Rabbi Yochanan said, I don't care how big it is, if it has mechitzas, it's Rishus HaYochid. I'm going to prove that that isn't true. You tell me what those words meant. How big can it be? How big can it be for what, okay? You think that it's talking about the Seifa, meaning the last din, which says that you're allowed to go between that little island and the Yam. And you're saying, yeah, up to Beit Zatayim. But if it's longer, if it's bigger than a Beit Zatayim, you're not allowed to carry from it into the Yam. That's ridiculous. On the contrary, the bigger it is, the more a Carmelite it becomes. I mean, so for sure you're carrying from a Carmelite to a Carmelite. So you're adding, well, it's also Lohuka Fladira. Great, okay. You said a Karfaf Lohuka Fladira is just a kind of Carmelite. So then I would be able to carry from the Carmelite to the Yam. So I mean, Carmelite to Carmelite, Kometalta, what would be the problem? The only way to understand this is that it's going back on the Reisha. So what it's saying is, if you have this rock island, which is 10 tvachim high and 4 tvachim wide, then it's a rishus hayochid, and you're not allowed to carry from it to the Carmelite. How big can it be for that to be true? It can only be up to a Beit Zatayim, but if it's more than a Beit Zatayim, it is not a rishut hayochid, and it becomes a rishut of a Carmelite, and therefore you could carry. Ha! That would mean that you can carry from this mukav, lohuk of Ladira into a Carmelite, even Lakula. Right? You, Rabbi Yochanan, said, no, of course it's not Lakula. It's only Lachumra that you can't carry within it outside of Arba Amas. But, I mean, we're not going to be Mako. Here it says you could do it even if it's bigger than that size, you could carry from the island into the sea. Okay? So then, obviously, it's true Lakula as well. Ha! To Yufti the Rabbi Yochanan. Oh, my Rav, these poor semi-intellects over here. People who don't know how to learn. And they're asking kashas on Rabbi Yochanan. They should be ashamed of themselves. Mandalo yada tirutzi masnaisa to Yufti masiv leil Rabbi Yochanan. Somebody doesn't even know how to explain a braita. He goes and he asks a kasha on Rabbi Yochanan that any two-year-old should know the answer to. Oh, my God. Yes! It's going back on the Reisha, okay? And it's not the way you thought, but it's going back on the Reisha, and it's saying, so you see that even Lakula, once it's that big, you're allowed to carry from it into the Yam. It's not going on that part of the Reisha, silly. It's going back on what is implied in the Reisha. What the Braisha says like this, that you're not allowed to carry between the Yam and the island. Why? Because it's Rishus HaYochid. Okay. But that means that you're allowed to carry on that rock, on that island, as long as you want. And so, meaning you can carry 10 feet, 20 feet, I don't care. Ah, on that, says the Braita, but how big can the island be for you to be allowed to carry as far as you want? Only up to a Beit Zatayim. But if it's a Beit Zatayim, so at that part, it becomes a Karfaf Shalohuk of Ladira. And since it was Lohuk of Ladira, you're not even allowed to carry on it. Forget, but obviously you can't carry from it to the Yam. What does this have to do with Rabbi Yochanan? It's outrageous. So how long can you carry? Ad Beit Zatayim, more than that, not. Ravashi says, look, I think there's another issue over here. And the issue is exactly the thorn in our side. The issue is that there is a contradiction in calling a Mokum Shalohuk of Ladira a Carmelis. And you're 100% right. But it has nothing to do with Rabbi Yochanan. Rabbi Yochanan was talking about its status as Rishus HaYochid D'Oraisa, correct? That doesn't change. What does change is that the moment the Rabbanan gave it a din of a Carmelite, you're right. A din of a Carmelite vis-a-vis the halacha of not carrying outside of Arba Amas. They had no option but to include in that takona that it is a Carmelite, and you can carry from it into another Carmelite, even though you can't, because it's really Rishus HaYochid. But since the din of a Carmelite itself is only a Rabbanan fiction, they had expanded that fiction to include a Karfaf, that's Yosri Beit Zatayim. There was no way for them to maintain that fiction unless they would say, once we call it a Carmelite, you can actually carry from this Carmelite into the Yam, which is another Carmelite. What does that have to do with Rabbi Yochanan, who was talking about the question of whether it's Rishus HaYochid D'Oraisa? Absolutely nothing. So the way I understand it, says Ravashi, you're right, and your diak was right, and you're not as stupid as he said you were, but it's irrelevant. Le'olam Areisha. However, remember, Hein Amru, the Hein Amru. The Rabbanan were the one who created the idea of a Carmelite, and the Rabbanan are the one that are calling this a Carmelite. And therefore, they can just pretend then it's a Carmelite, even when it comes to carrying from this Carmelite to the other Carmelite. Hey, Namru, look, they were the one who says, let's call a Karfav Yotermi Beitza Taim Shulhu Kafladira, let's call it a Carmelite, right? Okay. And therefore they say, Emetaltim Bola Barbamas, but they also were the ones who said, in general, you cannot carry from Rishus HaYochid into a Carmelite. And because of that, they decided that if it's a Beit Sataim or less than a Beit Sataim, we're over there, you're allowed to carry as far as you want in it. Over there, it makes sense for us to say, look, it's a real Rishus HaYochid, and you can't carry from a real Rishus HaYochid into the Yam, which is a Carmelite, because it's a Rishus HaYochid Gemura. Even Min Rabbanan, it's a Rishus HaYochid Gemura, allowing you to carry. But once it becomes more than a Beit Sataim, where now I have to aser carrying within it, by calling it a Carmelite, and I'm not ready to create a new set of Rishuyas on Shabbos and give it a new name of semi-Carmelite, semi-Rishus HaYochid, which we'll call a Karfav Shlohu Kufladira, that I don't see is an option. And therefore, in the case where I had to call it a Carmelite to Aser being Metalto in it, I also had to be Matir, even though it went against my other Gezerah, I had to be Matir carrying from it into the Yam, which is a Carmelite, and from the Carmelite to it. Why? Because if I Aser doing that, so then people might think that actually this rock is a real Rishus HaYochid, even Midrabanan. If they thought it was a real Rishus HaYochid, even Midrabanan, then that would be mevatel the entire sense of our attempt to create an Isser of carrying more than Arba Amas. And it would completely upend the whole basis of our Takana of Amokam Shalohu Kafladira. Because it doesn't work to create this new, not Carmelis, not Rishus HaYochid, not Rishus HaRabim, Rishus, that is just not workable. So we had to give up on something. So either we had to give up on the Gezerah of not carrying from something which is a Rishus HaYochid Gemura D'Oraisa into a Carmelite, or we had to give up on the Gezerah of telling you you cannot carry an Amokam Shalohu Kafladira that is Yotzer Mibeit Satayim. Now, you'll ask me, okay, so why did you care more about that Gezerah than the other Gezerah? You had to give up on something. Why did you choose this? Umayshna. Okay, so then why did you say, I'd rather make sure that people will not carry inside of a Karfav Shalohu Kafladira outside of Arba Amas? I care more about that than I care about the possible loosening of the overall takana that I have about not carrying from a Rishus HaYochid into a Carmelite and from a Carmelite into a Rishus HaYochid. Does that make sense? Why is one more important to the other? I would have thought it's the other way around. I mean, I would have thought that the more important issue is the basic concept. You're not concentrating, Moshe. Is the basic concept of the idea that a Carmelis has dinim that make it usher to carry from it into Rishus HaYochid. I mean, that seems to me to be the main issue, not the question of the diurin, which is basically an imported from Erevin issue. And that's why the sugya is here, gentlemen. Even though we talked about these Rishuyas in Shabbos all the time, the reason that we couldn't get to the bottom of it is because the concept of diurin is a concept that is not really a Shabbos concept. It's an Erevin concept, which we applied to the Rishuyas of Shabbos when we got to the din of Karfav Shalohu Kafladira and included that idea in an extension of one of the Arba Rishuyas of Shabbos. You see how marvelously the two Mesechtas are interwoven. So it's because of this that now we need to deal with this issue. What's more important to you? The idea of there being that Rishus called a Carmelis? I mean, isn't that more fundamental than the issue of whether you should worry about the diurin in terms of being able to carry in a mokum that is not Hukah Fadira, that's Yoter, Mibet Sataim? I mean, that seems like a sort of a side kind of issue. And you chose to make that your primary concern, which I don't understand. Like, why? Says the Gemara, it's very simple. Why? Remember the Takonas Derabanan are predicated also on the statistical likelihood of the situation occurring. And that in a makam where it's lo shchiach, the Rabbanan generally do not concern themselves with the Gezerah. The combination of these two issues is not shchiach. In other words, that we should have over here both the question of caring for emergency sayochet to a Carmelist in this weird situation where you're talking about. I mean, only Richie gets into these situations. He's got this little island, and it's right off the island, and he wants to carry into his boat, and his boat is too small to be considered a Rishon Sayochid, and because that's part of the Yam, and has a din of the Carmelists, and so on. I mean, how many people are going to have this question of whether you're going to carry from a Mokum Shaluk of Ladira into the Yam? I mean, come on. So that is something that is not Shriach. We're ready to give up on the problem there in order to protect the more likely issue, which comes up all the time, which is carrying from a regular Rishon Sayochid into a Carmelist and vice versa. That happens all the time, to combine a Karfav Shlohuk of Ladira together with a Carmelist and get into a problem like that. You need to be a Rebbe in order to get into those kind of questions. And so because of that, they were Mevater. So this is marvelous, because we finally get a real insight into something that has honestly been a very painful subject that never had a real resolution. And this is how we paskin. And this is the Rambam talks out, that this is not Shchiach, and because of that, it was not included in the overall Gezerah, which in this case allows the survival of both of those Gezerahs, which is absolutely marvelous. Okay. So that means Rav Ashi is saying, yes, your Diak from the Braisa is correct, and nonetheless, it's irrelevant to Rabbi Yochanan, who was talking about Rishon Sayochid. We're talking about a Carmelist. Now, we get into an actual Maisa over here that involved us in the questions of the Goy, but in a different direction. And that was asking a Goy to carry in the Mavoy for me. Now, this is something that people do all the time, unfortunately, in terms of Rishon Sarabim. And, of course, people are completely not makpid on Amir La'akam, which is a disaster. But in the idea, yes, I like that. I am a rock, I am an island. Exactly. Beautiful, Barnea. Yes, indeed. Definitely a remez to today's sugya. Because, I mean, after all, we were talking also about the idea of being more comfortable in your own rishus than in messing with all of the crazies out there. So, yes, indeed. Anyway, so they were about to do this Brit Milah, and remembered that it used to be the halacha that if you didn't have hot water, you could not do the Brit Milah. Now, we're not makban on that anymore medically, and because of that, we don't care if you have hot water, you don't have hot water. But in those days, and very likely for very good reasons, because of the question of the lack of antiseptics and antibiotics, obviously, so they needed to have boiled water in order to be able to use. And if they didn't, they were not going to make any kind of incisions, which Chas V'Shalom could kill the patient, which is amazing, right? I mean, this was stuff that was only discovered very recently. So, okay, so at the time of the Gemara, if you didn't have boiled water, you don't do a Bris Milah. They had boiled up the water, and somebody spilled out the water. So Rabbi said to them, okay, I got plenty of hot water in my house. Go, and he was in that chatzer where they were going to be doing the, it was actually a mavoi, but he was in one of the chatzeras. He was in a chatzer together with Abaye, which had, in fact, itself a separate mavoi that it went into with other chatzeras. That's the background. So Rabbi says, okay, what's the big deal? I'll go into my house and get some water. So Abaye says to them, excuse me, we didn't make an Erev this week. Oh. Can make an Erev? Oh, well, it's okay, because we did make a Shitov, right? So because we're members of the Mavoi, we can rely on the Shitov Mavois as being the overall Erev. Because remember, the only reason that we continue to do an Erev and a Chatzar when we have a Mavoi is for the kids, so that the kids should go around from house to house collecting, and that way they'll always remember that we need an Erev. So, okay, so let's rely on that. So Nismo Chashitov, says Abaya, I have bad news. We didn't make a shitov this week either. What? You didn't make a shitov? Oh, my God. All right, so fine. So tell good old Mavag, you know, that he should carry it. So ask a goy to carry out the hot water from my house. And Abaye said, now at that moment, now this issue is especially for Moshe Forman. At that moment, I wanted to argue further and tell Rabbi, no, you can't do that either. But I didn't. Now, the reason that I didn't was because Rabbi Yosef stepped on my foot and said, shut the heck up, will you please? Just can we get on with the bris? So it's because Rabbi Yosef told me a very important yesod, Because Rav Yosef said in Rav Kahana's name that I learned a very important thing. And this I learned when I was learning by Rav Yehuda, that if somebody is making a mistake about a d'oraisa, so then you keep driving him crazy. But wait a minute, isn't it this problem? Rebbe, but wait a minute, don't we have that problem? And so on and so forth. You can't get your, not put your teeth into him until he's ready to kick at you. Because look, it's a d'oraisa, so you keep asking. But in a d'rabbanan, okay, so in a d'oraisa, first you ask all your questions and then you act. In a d'rabbanan, first you act and then you ask the questions. So since Rabbah wants to act, so because of that, just leave him alone. Okay, so I shut up and I let him do it. Now this, I just want you to know that I have a very personal relationship to this because it's my great-great-great-grandfather who was medayik from this Gemara, a very important yesod. I was brought up on this yesod from my father. This was his mother's great-grandfather, which was the Nesivas HaMishpat. The Leuberbaum family in Tzfat, dear Gabi, you can actually go ahead and take a look. The house is still there, Mishpachat Leuberbaum, across from the shul of the famous shul. It escapes me for a moment. But anyway, so he was what? Yes. Yeah. So, what he says is, you see from here that if you're doing the wrong thing, minarabonan, thinking you're doing the right thing, there's no problem of doing the iser. Because the entire iser is essentially not to be meired against the rabbanan. So you have to be makabal their psak. If you believe that this is the psak, you're obviously not being meired against the rabbanan. So there is no bidi eved type of kapora that you need, nothing that you did wrong. There's simply nothing wrong. So even though you believe Rabbah is completely mistaken and he's being over on this rabbanan, he doesn't believe that. So what do you care? So let him have a good time. Even if it turns out that you were right and he was wrong, he was still okay. So everything is okay. That's how he learns it, and he's many, many rayas from other places in Shas, and I've been teaching you all along with that basis, that you can't be over on a Rabbanan if you don't want to be over on the Rabbanan, and you think you're following the Rabbanan. Fine. Okay, there are many who argue on him, and they tina, no, it doesn't mean that. It means that, listen, Rabbah has a right to make a psak halacha. You don't agree, but meanwhile, you could be samech on it, which is like sort of the way that the Beit Yosef answers the Rivet's complaint about the Rambam, about how can people really, I don't know what the psak halacha is, it's on the Beit Yosef. He says, what's the problem? He's certainly a competent halachic authority, even though you may not think he's the word of God. So until you know differently, rely on him. What's the big deal, right? And that's the idea of Eros. Okay, fine. This has very much to do with the whole machlokas, the Ramban and the Rambam, about why is it that according to the Rambam, we don't consider every Rabbana to be the equivalent of a D'oraisa, since, based on the Gemara we had before, that you could be over on an Isser D'oraisa, which Isser of Lo Sasur. So then it would always be a D'oraisa. This is the obvious answer. Of course it won't be a D'oraisa, because if you think that it's okay and you're not doing it as a Lo Sasur, you're not being over on anything. So therefore, there's no Isser whatsoever. Okay, anyway, I don't want to drive you all crazy, but it's like a beautiful sugya. Okay, so in any event, I shut up, okay? But I really had a problem with him. Anyway, so Rabbi Yosef tells Abaya, hey, Abaya, if I hadn't been stepping on your foot, what would you have asked? Like, why did you want to ask? Let me hear now. Let's discuss it, which we'll do tomorrow, Bezrat Hashem. Okay, so now we've got a good picture of this. We got to the bottom of a sugya that has been with us, mamish, from the beginning of Masechet Shabbos. It is such a joy to see it in context and all of its implications. I'm sure you won't be able to lose that smile the whole day from this amazing daf. And so because of it, take it with you. Enjoy. And the more you smile, the more I'll be smiling along with you. Have a wonderful, wonderful day, everybody. Kol tov.